You're listening to Extra Innings on the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us every Sunday night as we talk East Carolina baseball. We will recap the previous week's action while also taking a look at what's ahead. Now let's talk Pirate baseball.
Welcome into Extra Innings here on the Sports Objective as the Pirates go undefeated this week, 4-0. In fact, a sweep over Charlotte in Charlotte. That was nice. In fact, with us right now, Kyle from LaGrange Barber. How are you, man?
What's going on, Dave? How are y'all this beautiful Sunday evening?
I'm very, very happy. Very happy. How are you, Bubba Rosenbaum?
Doing well, guys. We better liven this thing up a bit. I mean, we did have a 4-0 week and sweep the weekend.
Yeah, I'm going to ask the head janitor of Extra Innings, and that would be Corey Glore. He's got the brooms out. What's up, man?
Good evening, gentlemen. And yeah, our pregame little sit-down and chat was a little lethargic, so we're going to pick it up a little bit here. We're all fighting spring forward, I know. We're all fighting that honor loss, but we can power through it. I believe in us.
I like your comment about that today, about I can't stand – I've got to the point where they're talking about getting rid of daylight savings time. I love that on the broadcast today about how you lost an hour, and the baseball operations dude was like, how is a good thing to get more sunlight?
Yeah, Blake Hart agree, the new director of baseball ops, who he does so much, that job and what he is doing is so much behind the scenes that you never see or hear about. I mean, he's really kind of the conductor of the train, especially on road trips. I was sitting with him this morning before breakfast as he was checking off players to make sure everyone was accounted for so they could eat and then be on time. And he said, I love the fact that we're getting an extra hour of sunlight. And I'm like, wow, that's the exact opposite way I approach life. But he's like the nicest dude. And he, you know, things kind of roll off of his shoulders like that. He's a very positive outlook on everything. And I see the gray on the edges a little bit more than I think Blake does. But, yeah, so they're two sides of the same coin. You see more sunshine, but you lose more sleep.
I think most people like it. I think most people like the longer daylight for particularly the summertime approaches.
Yeah, once you get used to it. I mean, it probably takes until probably Tuesday this week to get back into a normal rhythm. You'll feel it tomorrow when you're at work and you feel a little groggy probably. But then once Tuesday hits, then things will get back to normal here. But I traffic in the world of complaining. So that's where I am a professional.
Oh,
well, you definitely can be.
Social media, then.
I am in the perfect profession for what I'm very good at, and that is complaining outwardly about nothing important.
Well, you definitely can't be complaining about the bats. How about that? 57 runs to 11. I believe my math is doing right over the last five games. So, Corey, you have to be happy about that.
Yeah, I mean, you're going back to High Point, if my math is correct here.
Correct.
And I've had to do quite a bit of math now over the last 72 hours, I would say. This offense has been really relentless ever since High Point. And frankly, the High Point game and the Liberty game were almost, you know, plain offensive approaches compared to what we saw in Charlotte with everything that they were spinning. In those three games against the 49ers, that they kept hitting the ball against High Point and against Liberty. And then Charlotte was not just hitting the ball, but just being an absolute maniac on the base paths. I mean, that they were flying. And so they caused so much pressure over the weekend that even when Charlotte got out of innings, you never felt like they were in a comfortable spot on the mound. Even today, when they were pitching very well and the starter today was throwing a good game, there were always kind of that uneasy feeling you felt on the Charlotte side that if a Pirate runner got on, then look out, because you just had no idea who was going to take off, how it was going to come at them. They really kind of had their say about what happened this weekend offensively, and it was impressive to watch.
It was funny because
– Sorry, go ahead, Dave.
I was going to make a point. I wanted you to chime in on this, Bubba, and then you can take it. It was funny. Bubba and I were doing the interview, and Bubba led the interview with Robert Woodward, and it was just funny because I just had a sense that the game they had the night before, the midweek game, it just felt like, I don't know, Bubba, maybe I'm making too much of this, but it just felt like that he was very he was not as confident as you would think he would be about his pitching staff, and that gave me it was like an uneasy feeling just hearing him talk. Maybe I'm making too much of that, and it gave me hope for this weekend, and I'm glad I was right.
Yeah, taking a look at things, and you're referencing that midweek game that they had against Coastal Carolina.
Yeah.
I think it was 15-6 was the final in that one. But
that's right.
But yeah, I mean, his weekend starters had actually fared pretty well coming in. Looking by the numbers, but obviously a much different animal is what they're facing with the Pirate offense this weekend. I think Corey described it best. And I was listening to today's pregame show on the way to the ballpark, and Corey just said, he said there's been way too much production 1-9 to single people out, and it's just been constant over the course of the first two games. And today, not as much so, but we did what we needed to do, and the pitching came through once again.
Yeah, today was a normal game. Like, today was a normal baseball game to wrap up the series, but it was maybe more impressive results of the three, because from inning one to inning nine, this team really had to scrape out production and grind out a victory, kind of like what we saw a few times in the early going of the season at home in those weekends against William & Mary and Georgia Southern, where they really had to execute from start to finish. The first two games, they were executing, no question about it, against the 49ers. It all just kind of felt easy, and that's not the case. It comes with the preparation and the work going in, and knowing that, you know, they watched as much film as they could on Bryce McGowan for Friday and Ryan Shanskowski for Saturday. And you're right, Bubba, they had pitched very well heading in the previous 2 weeks, particularly when they really handled a pretty good St. John's team. That certainly caught attention. And I think it allowed these guys to laser in on the fact that that starting rotation for Charlotte did a number on a team that is constantly contending in their conference and usually hanging around in the regionals in St. John's. And so allowing that to kind of, you know, that happening the week before and seeing that, seeing the film and saying, all right, if they can do this to a team as quality as that and a program with the history as that, they can do it to anybody. And they went in on Friday and they made it pretty abundantly clear that they had a pretty staunch plan of attack, not just at the plate, but when they were on base. And boy, did they use it to considerable effect Friday and Saturday, and even glimmers of it when they were on today. When they got on, they broke out the running attack, and it caused issues late.
Before we dive any deeper into the weekend, that's what I wanted to discuss briefly, that Liberty game, 11-0. Liberty is a team that was in the NCAAs a season ago, and Pirates jumped on the flames right out of the gates with a three-run shot by Bryson Worrell. And then it was a Johnny Holstaff effort by the pitching staff. Tristan Kimmel got the start, Cam Colmore, Garrett Saylor, Elijah Gill, and Dylan Lawson, all who saw action, and Garrett Saylor picked up the win.
Yeah, and gave up a hit. I mean, this is two midweek games in a row now, going back to Elon, where your Johnny Holstaff looked like the best pitcher in a team with some great pitching right now. And to get the comprehensive effort on the hill from those five on Wednesday, and now making midweeks very different looking, and now it will be very much put into practice this week with two games coming up in the midweek. But when you can go out there in midweek competition and pitch like this team has over the last 2 weeks, then all bets are off as to what things can really be done for this East Carolina team. The pitching was unreal against Liberty. And there's no question that game flipped in the first inning when Liberty's starting pitcher left with an injury, and an injury that, you know, suddenly the velocity was down, and that at bat to Bryson Worrell, and the freshman Haga had to leave, and a new pitcher comes in, and two pitches later, Bryson hits a 3-run home run and the game's over. Like that, the game was over right off the bat. So there was a weird feeling around the game right away because of that. But for if you're those five Pirate pitchers, especially, you know, a handful of them who are, you know, new to the proceedings and still trying to find their pace and find their spot in the pitching staff to come out and perform the way that they did against a team that has been very good this year, can go a long way to as we head further into March and the conference play. No question about it.
Corey, one of the things that I've noticed as maybe a common theme for the season so far is, except for the Indiana game, it seems like the Pirates jump on opponents early, and then you've got the great pitching from starting pitching, middle, and obviously closers to kind of like keep your, I hate to use that term, but you keep your boot on somebody's throat.
Yeah, every game during this winning streak, they've either scored in the first inning or the second inning, and they've broken a scoreless deadlock right away. And when you can play from in front, one, it keeps all your options open offensively, not just your plate discipline and what you're keying in on against a starting pitcher. But then once you get on, it allows you to do more things, take more gambles, try more things. And then if you are a starting pitcher, or in Wednesday's case, if you're a guy coming out of the bullpen and you see you already have a lead to work with and you're already kind of in the mode of protecting leads in that position, then it allows you to be yourself. It doesn't put a ton of immense pressure on you to try and be too fine, try and keep, you know, a tie game knotted up or keep a team within a run or two. It allows you to just be you on the mound. And then when this team just keeps building and building and building leads like they did in Charlotte, then it gives you free rein to frankly be the type of pitcher that you think you could be and just throw yourself and see what happens. And then say the ball gets hit and then you have one of the best defenses in the nation behind you right now, just backing you up and ready to be there and close the door. So this team, that was a huge element of last year's club, playing with early leads was a huge element to their success. And it is a monster factor to this year's team. Especially during this five-game winning streak, where they've never trailed during this five-game winning streak. And it's all because they get out on teams right off the bat, and that allows everyone, whether you're hitting, whether you're playing defense, or whether you're pitching, to just be comfortable and be you. And that's always been the mantra of this team, is not trying to do too much, just be yourself. And when you have an advantage early on in the run column, then you get to be yourself, and we've seen that when these guys are being themselves, they're a pretty damn good ball club, as we've seen over the last week.
Looking at Friday's game, you talk about just the offense being relentless. That's what Bryce McGowan, that's what he actually had the Pirates number early, struck out, I think, four out of the first five batters, or at least four of the first five outs were via strikeout, Well, that's what we started to chip away a little bit and started putting things together, starting off with Ryder Giles. But then we scored, after being shut out in the first inning, we scored in six out of seven frames. And in that game, you had nine guys with hits and six guys with multi-hit games, led by Ryder Giles and Alec Burleson, who both had three hits.
It seemed like the Bryce McGowan fastball, and Bubba, I know you were at the games, and so you saw it too Friday. It caught the team off guard a little bit, because I think heading in, at least when I kind of sat down and chatted and asked about Bryce, they were thinking about 93, 92 on the fastball. He was at 96 early on, and I think that was a little bit of a surprise initially. And that's why they were having trouble getting the bat on the ball in that first two innings. But once they got a feel of, actually, he can sit in the mid-90s consistently, which is what McGowan was able to do, even as he was getting hit around, this Pirate team hits the fastball as well as anybody. And so then they started to get it. And then that was an early indicator in that first inning of what the series was going to be, where even though they didn't score, Alec Burleson takes off to try and steal second base. It turns into the final out of the inning. But once that happened, in my head, I said, well, okay, if they're going to let Alec run here, then they really believe that there's some damage they could do. And once they got on base regularly and it started in the second inning with the triple by Cadell to lead things off, and it just unfolded from there, they wreaked havoc on Bryce McGowan and then every single reliever that Charlotte brought out. And it's because they kept working counts. They kept getting hits with two strikes. The first runs of the series were a two-out, two-strike hit by Ryder Giles, and when the Pirates nearly squandered a bases-loaded opportunity, but he came through, and that set the tone for what was a pretty amazing first two games offensively, in which they banged out 35 hits across the two games, and 21 of them came with two strikes. Like, that's obscene. Like, that's an obscene number. And there were so many of those moments on Friday that a Charlotte pitcher nearly found a way to limit the damage, and then bang, another run was across. And it was an amazing job by the Pirate offense Friday, particularly as that game got later and the temperature kept dropping and the wind kept staying at 20, 25 miles per hour, to stay locked in and to keep just the pedal down from the very start to the very end. And with the exception of one little moment, the sixth inning, that game was never in doubt.
You created a nice segue for me, Colby. I was going to say, in that first game, we had that 7-0 lead, and then they put up that four spot in the sixth, but we immediately respond with two in the seventh, and then a five spot in the top of the eighth that really put it out of reach.
The two times this weekend where Charlotte really started climbing back in, Friday night, then earlier today in Sunday's game, the Pirates had an immediate response, and the high quality teams find a way to do that, whether they give up a lead, whether they're suddenly trailing, or whether their lead gets much smaller, as was the case Friday when suddenly it was a 3-run game after it was 7, and then they just come right back and say, you know what, we're still going to do our business here, and then they turn the 3-run lead into a 5-run lead, and then whammo, the next inning, it's up to 10. And a game that was over from the start got a little interesting late, and then it was over again. And when the Pirates are really firing on all cylinders offensively, that's what they've been able to do, where they take an early lead, and then they absolutely blow it up late. And we saw that twice, and even three times this weekend in Charlotte, including Sunday's game. They took a tiny lead and got it to 3 late in the finale. So that's when this Pirate offense is really, really cooking. That's when you can tell, is when they take a lead and they say, we're going to really put this to bed now. And they did it all three times.
And one of the things – sorry.
Mr. Gay, I was just going to say, Corey, it seems like the difference this year, it took them a little bit to get the bats going, but now the bats are going. And it seems that maybe it's Mr. Obvious here, but it seems the difference for me this year is we're so deep at pitching that it's a good problem to have, that you have a whole bunch of guys that pitching by committee, like during the midweek, and you don't know who the starter is going to be. I know you were talking to a coach earlier today before the game, and he's having trouble figuring out like about which pitchers to pitch and all that, but that's a good problem to have.
Yeah, I mean, I was sitting down to do my interview with him. He doesn't do it live, shockingly. Radio magic for you. We tape our pregame interview hours before the game. And I sat down with him at the hotel, and he has these two index cards with pitchers' names written on it, who's available, lefty, righty, who's better against who, who's better coming into an inning, who's better with a fresh inning, all of that stuff just written down. And he's just looking at it. And he says, I have so many pitchers. Like, I mean, it's such an amazing problem. And he turned to me and said, it's the deepest pitching that I've had since you've been here, right? And I was like, yeah, I think so. I would agree with you. I just did a quick glance back at the three games this weekend here, fellas, and the Pirates only used one pitcher twice during the course of the weekend. That was Mayhew on Friday and then today. Everybody else was once. Now, granted, they had monster enough leads in the first two games to throw some guys out there that have only pitched sporadically this season, but when you win big, that gives you that opportunity, and that allows guys like Elijah Gill, A.J. Wilson, Nick Logish, who we haven't seen a ton of so far this year, work their stuff, pitch their game, and you never know when those guys will be needed down the line to come through in a spot in a tighter game. And that allows them to take what is an immensely deep pitching staff already and make it absolutely insanely deep. I mean, we're talking about this team can go to 10, 12 guys right now that they trust in the relief corps. And that's mind-boggling. And that's something that I think the team thought that they would have that capability, but to have the success up and down that everybody's having right now is pretty staggering. And that's a testament to not just the guys that they brought in, but the work that Jason Dietrich has done with these guys in a very short amount of time to get them all to a point where, you know, we didn't see, you know, a Cam Colmore this weekend. You know, we didn't see Garrett Saylor this weekend. And these guys have been go-to guys so far. And they didn't need to pitch. Like, I mean, stuff like that is really, really amazing when you put it into context.
Yeah, pitching depth maybe in March, it's nice to talk about, but it really gets you thinking about June.
I mean, for sure. I mean, if you want to head down that path and see what the team ERA sits, you know, heading into the game today, it was just a tick over 3. Now it's probably going to drop down a little bit. I haven't checked the updated NCAA team stats and where the Pirates sit now. But, I mean, even the individual ERAs of pitchers right now, they are minuscule when you go way deep down the sheet. And you know, it is amazing to watch this team work on the mound right now, where it was funny. I think, you know, everybody was looking at what the offense might do heading into the year. It's going to look different, you know, understandably so, with all the guys that were lost and all the guys that were drafted. But then following up right behind that, people would say, you know what, I think we're going to pitch pretty well. And 15 games into the year, they're pitching as well as I've ever seen from an East Carolina baseball team. Starting rotation and bullpen. I mean, there are just so many weapons that this team can go to right now.
Speaking of where the Pirates rank in the national statistics as far as the team, how about fielding percentage? The Pirates did not commit an error on the week, and they currently have a fielding percentage of .991.
Yeah, and that was the high water mark around the country heading into the weekend. I mean, Duke held that at the top spot around the country at .991. And the Pirates entered with .989, and so it goes up to 100s after these three games. To have what is a completely new infield do what they've done so far from what we saw a season ago. And yeah, you could say Alec Burleson now at first isn't really new. Well, last year, he didn't play a ton of first until late in games. It was Spencer Brickhouse. And then you had Brady Lloyd and Turner Brown, and it was Ryder Giles at third out of position. Now he's at shortstop, and you have Connor Norby, who's soaking pretty much everything up at second base, and now Zach Agnos over at the hot corner. You'd be hard-pressed to find a lot of teams around the country that can play this well defensively 2 years in a row and have freshmen at third base replaced by a freshman at third base the next year. And then you've had a switch at first base with the injury to Francisco. You've seen Skylar Brooks over there for a little bit. Now Alec Burleson is kind of becoming the first baseman now with Franny's injury. So you have those four getting to know each other very quickly here and getting to know everybody's tendencies, how much range everybody has. And it's become an absolute lights-out element of this club. And not to mention that right now your outfield is extremely quick and can cover a lot of ground with Jane, Worrell, and Hoover as your starting outfielder. Those are three dynamic speed threats that can close up gaps very quickly. And no one's made a miscue out there yet. So this team defensively has been an absolute brick wall, and that gives all these guys to take the hill, particularly guys who pitch to contact. And Alec Burleson is one of those guys. Tyler Smith is one of those guys. It allows them to just be them, because in the back of their head, they're not thinking, man, you know, something might happen behind me. Like, they know that when a pitch gets hit, it's likely going to wind up in a good spot for the East Carolina defense.
We talked about the offense as a whole. I'm just looking at some of the individual performances this weekend. I know today on the pregame you were talking about Burley, and or maybe it was actually when he hit that home run. You said, well, there's your American Athletic Conference Player of the Week. Burton Burley was 9 out of 12 on the weekend and had a couple of other plate appearances where he reached via walk. So 11 out of 14 for Burley in terms of on-base percentage. And then you have a guy like Lane Hoover. What a weekend he had. He had two hits in every ball game, laid down a couple of beautiful bunts, getting it past the pitcher. With the second baseman, the first baseman did not have a play. Connor Norby had six hits. Seth Cadell had six hits with at least, I guess, four extra base hits he hit for the series cycle. So it was just 1 through 9, just unbelievable production.
You're just going to gloss over Lane Hoover's first career home run on Friday.
Yeah. I'll leave that off and talk about the short game.
Talk about a very unexpected moment. You saw it in the crowd there, Bubba, but Lane ran so fast around those bases. Like, he had no concept of what to do. Like, it was his first career collegiate home run, and I don't believe he hit one in high school. Like, I mean, it's one of those moments where it's like, oh my good Lord, how on earth did that just happen? And he crushed it. Like, I mean, the wind was blowing out, and I'm sure it had a little effect on that baseball, but I think that's out on most days unless the wind's howling in. And then the very next at-bat, he pushes a bunt single for an RBI, like, right after that. And he also steals two bags in that game. And he stole, I believe, another base today. No, he didn't. He was caught stealing today. But Lane Hoover at the top of the order, it has been a little bit up and down for him so far in his sophomore year, and that was rectified over the weekend. You mentioned Alec Burleson. We'll see if he's Conference Player of the Week. I've very little idea what a ton of guys around the league did. I have no idea if Hunter Goodman had three grand slams again like he did last weekend. But every single time Alec was at the plate, he just knew he was going to get a hit. Like, it was crazy to watch him, especially Friday when he was pitching, and it was clear he didn't have his best stuff. Like, he was laboring for a lot of that start on Friday. But then at the plate, he's on base five times. Like, it's just that is and then steals a couple bases, like, on top of that. Talk about just the epitome of what he can provide, where he will grind his way on the mound and get you into the sixth inning. Even when he is not as effective as he can be. But then he comes up to the plate and he's able to flush what's going on out on the hill and just continually get on base and then also do damage on the bases. And then when he slides over to first base, he's a lock at first base as well. So Alec did, and then continuing that throughout the weekend, he should be Player of the Week in the conference because – I'm not sure anyone had the success he did in all facets of the game like he pulled off. You mentioned Connor Norby. He had the game-winning RBI today. And his work defensively, I think, is now starting to get noticed because of how good this team overall is defensively. And a lot of people are looking at him taking over at second to see what would he bring to the table. Well, he's pretty damn good with the glove over at second base. And then, you know, Seth Cadell just finding the power stroke and hitting for the series cycle. And to me, Christian Jane was a massive breakout weekend. And when the Pirates were looking for probably something more from the outfield with the injury to Smallwood, and he comes in and he scores six runs across the weekend, he steals five bags. I mean, to get that from the eight-hole hitter and a guy who we know he can bring a lot of speed in pinch running roles, and he's very good defensively. And now for him to start swinging the bat like he has, suddenly things can really stretch out like we saw over the weekend, where it's not just the three-hole hitter, the four-hole hitter, your leadoff man contributing. It is 1 through 9. Everybody in this lineup was doing damage and severe damage this weekend.
As far as what you said about Lane Hoover, it would remind you, for Pirate fans, just a comparison, Charlie Yorgan, he didn't have much of a home run trot either.
Yeah, I'll say this. Charlie, I think, was more prone to run into one. Like he was a bigger guy than Lane at least. And I mean, Charlie was here for 4 years, and so Lane will likely, you know, get bigger as his career goes on. But you know, I remember Charlie hitting a homer in the regional final in Charlottesville. He had a walk-off homer, I believe it was against Charlotte back in 2017, ironically enough. He could find a little bit of juice to his ball, but Lane has been so effective when he gets the ball on the ground that when he gets it in the air, you're certainly not expecting the distance that he got Friday. And that kid was about ready to absolutely lose his mind Friday night when that happened. And it felt like it put the game out of reach. Charlotte would come back in that bottom half of the sixth. But when a guy like that's hitting a homer off of you, not only is it a huge boost to that Pirate dugout, but it's a pretty deflating moment for the opposition when a guy like that's able to really drive one and get a piece of it and just send it into the stratosphere like he did.
And then, obviously, with the big lead, you talked about what it enabled us to do with the pitching staff and throwing so many guys and only throwing C.J. Mayhew more than once. You had guys like Alec Makarevich and then also Nick Barber, guys like that getting in, getting significant playing time and producing extra base hits.
The games like Friday and Saturday are why I have an erasable pen that I use to score games, because, and this was the first four games of this winning streak as well, just how many substitutions this team makes when they have big leads. And because it's very important for Coach Godwin to get as many guys on that bench in playing time when he can. And these moments afford him the opportunity to bring in an Alec Makarevich. He got his first RBI as a Pirate in Saturday's game, and bring in a Carson Wisenhunt and a Trevor Lucido, because you never know when the time will be needed for those guys to start taking over in bigger spots and starting spots down the stretch in closer games and important games and conference play and big midweek matchups. You don't know when your time's going to be needed. And so for a roster that's half new to D1 baseball heading into the season, getting them as much reps as possible at D1 ball in games that afford you that opportunity to do so, they can prove to be invaluable down the stretch. And it also keeps everyone engaged in that dugout where, yeah, your number's probably going to get called if we have a big lead to come in there, and you're going to be in left field or you're going to be pinch running here. You're going to take over behind the plate. It keeps guys focused and lasered in. When in a game like Friday, things might, start waning a little bit attention-wise in that dugout. Well, all right, go in there and take a hack, and then, Matt James, you're going to be behind the plate. Or, Nick Barber, he's a senior. He's been around long enough. He knows the deal. But you're going to be at first. You're going to be at short. You're going to be at second. You're going to be everywhere. Like, all of that comes into play. And this team trusts these guys to still execute and do their jobs, even when a game is a 10-run lead in the eighth or ninth inning. Like, they feel confident to put them out there, and they're going to do what they need to do to finish the job.
And, Corey, that was one of the things that I was thinking about just now when you were talking about that, is the very fact that Cliff Godwin and the staff, they trust him enough. And another thing is when Cliff is recruiting these guys, not only is he talking about the two-way players, you'll have opportunity to pitch and play wherever else. Alec Burleson and some of these guys, they can play almost every position, or if not every position. But it's also him keeping his word, because he's trusting these guys. It shows why these guys would run through a brick wall for them. I hate to use the cliche, but they really do love Coach Godwin.
Yeah, I mean, when you come into this program, there's no bill of goods that's being sold. And if, you show the initiative, you show the will to be a better baseball player and a good person while you're around this program, you're going to get your chances to play. And you never, like, you look at the LeClaire Classic, and Skylar Brooks is starting against Indiana at first base because he's shown the initiative to do that. And he got to start at first base in the opener at Charlotte as well. you know, stuff like that. You know, Ben Newton with the work that he's done, and now he is really producing at a high level, to the point where he is getting regular playing time, whether he's DHing or whether he's, you know, spelling Cannell behind the plate and being the backstop like he was in the finale in Charlotte. Stuff like that, you know, you show that right off the bat, and you keep at it, and you keep pushing, you keep driving, you're going to get your chances. Not just, you know, stepping in garbage moments when games are out of reach and you're just there to, you know, make sure you grab the ball or make sure you lock in at the at-bat there. But, you know, you're going to get starts later on if you keep showing that, you know, drive. And you're going to get them sooner than maybe you would if you went to a different program. And East Carolina is very, very ready to show off the depth that they provide on any nightly basis. And that is a huge selling point for a lot of kids who are looking to find their next step. If you come to East Carolina, if you do your work, you're going to play. It's that simple. And we have seen that to a T here in the first 15 games of 2020.
Corey, one of the aspects of this weekend that we have not discussed, we talked about the performance on the field, but how about in the stands? The three games combined had an attendance of around 3,800, and what would you say, at least 65 or 70%, if not more, were Pirate fans?
Yeah, I know Saturday was sold out for sure, at least the seats were, and the capacity there is about 1,100 in terms of seats. And there were plenty of standing room tickets that were sold for Saturday as well. I think the final number was like close to 1,700 for Saturday.
Yep.
It was
yep.
a little bit less than that for Sunday's game, but it was funny. I had a couple friends driving in from Winston-Salem for the game Sunday, and all the Pirate allotment of tickets were taken up. And so I reached out to Charlotte, and I said, hey, you got maybe three tickets here that I could borrow for today's game. And they said, our tickets are taken up. Like, so they got sold out of their seating allotment as well for Sunday's game. This series was on the schedule for many people in the largest metro area in the state because it's very rare. It's, right now it's every 2 years that the Pirates get to that neck of the woods. And, I mean, Bubba, you're in that area, and there are so many East Carolina alums that live in Charlotte, that work in Charlotte. The Pirate Club wing in Charlotte had the massive tailgate set up on Saturday before the game. This was a big deal to get down that way and let fans and a lot of the families, there are a lot of kids on this roster from the Charlotte area, to see them close to home. You know, ECU athletics in general, they really don't wind up in Charlotte a ton, strangely enough, but across the sports. And now baseball has been there, you know, twice in the last 3 years, and it's now the second time in which you have seen a lot of purple and gold pack that stadium out. It happened back in 2017, and it happened again here this year. So I guess it's twice in 4 years to do more poor math for you.
Cool.
You know, it's not when the Pirates go on the road in this state, it has rarely felt like a road game. And that is a huge testament to where this program is, the interest in it, and the passion that exists for this baseball program and for this school in general that is very hard to find elsewhere around the country. And so to have, you're right, 65, 70% of the stands Saturday, probably about 60% of the stands today on Sunday be Pirate purple and gold, it's not surprising because I've seen it now 5 years running where wherever the Pirates go, particularly in this state, they show out and they show up big time.
Like you were saying, Corey, so many East Carolina alumni in not only the Charlotte area but the western part of the state, and it was awesome to see. I'm sure there were more than just these that I'm going to name, but there were a lot of East Carolina baseball letter winners out there this weekend. I saw the likes of Chad Tracy, who obviously played several years for the Diamondbacks and also some other organizations. And then you had some guys from back in the 1960s, guys like Dennis Barber and J.W. Edwards, who were on those teams that were won the NAIA.
Bring back Bubba.
And I returned JW his ring, but we look forward to having him on the podcast. But I saw him and Dennis Barber, and then also a guy like Kurt Morgan, who obviously played for Cliff here just a few years ago.
Yeah, Chad has he lives now in Charlotte, and he has a training facility there. And I remember when the Pirates were last in Charlotte, it was a rain affected series. There was a doubleheader on Saturday and an early game Friday. And so before the team went back to Greenville on Sunday, they toured Chad Tracy's training facility. And so his ties to the program are well known and very rich and very strong still. And I saw Kirk Morgan and Wes Covington, you know, walking around the concourse during Friday's game. I mean, the ties to Charlotte from East Carolina baseball and as you mentioned, Bubba, the western portion of the state, even going up to the Triad, where there are a good number of kids from that area, and it's just a 1 hour and change drive from wherever you might be in that part of the state. It is very much a part of the fabric of East Carolina baseball. And so to get out there and to bring this program to the people there is very important. And I'm glad that this series is back on the schedule because, to be frank, East Carolina could probably be at a point where they could schedule something else there. But it is important to keep this type of series on the books. To have the in-state matchup against a program that should be better than what it has been over the last few years in Charlotte, and to keep the ties to the Queen City area, to get back down there, to show alums down there the appreciation of supporting the program and all the players and former players that are from there, to keep roots there is very, very important, I feel, to the long-term continued success of this program.
And with where our program has been historically in baseball, I mean, this is obviously something that South Carolina or Clemson would not want to do on a consistent basis. I'm not saying that because they have an extremely challenging schedule with the SEC and ACC schedules. But maybe once every several years, maybe a three-game series where you play a game in Greenville and then a game in the Charlotte Knights Stadium, which is obviously much closer to them, but it's good for us as well with the alumni base in the western part of the state and specifically the Queen City, and then the third game in Columbia or Clemson.
I think what I find interesting, and this is me projecting myself, not knowing really anything within the program here, but the Charlotte program plays a couple of games in the Uptown Ballpark a few times a year. And, like, they will have Wake Forest in next week and NC State the week after at the AAA Park for one-game matchups. Those are return trips of midweek home and homes. I think East Carolina looks at a series like Charlotte going on the road to Charlotte as it's important for the sport in-state and the sport of college baseball to have an East Carolina, which has jumped into a national program, you know, a national picture with where they are success-wise against a Charlotte program that is in a very good conference that doesn't get the respect that it deserves in Conference USA, kind of like what the American is still, and sees, you know, Charlotte's not going to be able to bring in South Carolina for three or a North Carolina for three or those big names, much like the Pirates have struggles getting those teams in for three-game series. And they see a program right there and say, you know what, it wasn't that long ago where we were in Conference USA and we were in the same boat that you are. We are at a national level right now, and you know what? We're not terribly afraid to go to your park. And if we lose, we lose. But we know where we are as a program. And I think that there's still a mentality that exists on those really upper echelon names from the SEC, from the ACC, of they don't see value in series like that and going on the road to a Conference USA for a weekend or even going on the road to an American for a weekend. They worry that the risk outweighs the reward of doing stuff like that. East Carolina doesn't worry about that, because they're good enough to not worry about that. They let their play do the talking for them. And you know what? if a loss happens, then a loss happens. They'll make up for it later on down the line. They're that good enough to do that. And Charlotte's going to be not too far off in the not too distant future from contending in Conference USA. And they're going to want to keep luring teams in and try and, convince a Clemson to do something more than just a midweek. And so to say, you know what, we're getting a team that's consistently top 10, top 15, top 20 in the nation, hosting regionals, playing us on a regular basis in our park. What's the problem? And then Charlotte's come to Greenville as well and returned the favor. I think there's kind of an understanding. And, yeah, you know what, these two programs are actually legitimately helping each other out right here by putting this series in place. And it's not saying, You know what, Charlotte? We only want to play you if we play in your minor league park. Like that, Cliff Godwin and Jeff Palumbo say, we have no issue playing on your campus. And that's a pretty rare thing right now in college baseball and college sports for a program at East Carolina's level to talk to a team like Charlotte and say, yeah, we'll come to you. We'll come to you for a three-game series. And you know what? We'll go to your campus too. That's a pretty cool thing to have.
Corey, taking a look at what's ahead, and the Pirates have their first five-game week on the horizon. Elon will be coming in. The Pirates, of course, won at Elon here a couple weeks ago, but the Phoenix will be in town on Tuesday. They dropped 2 out of 3 this weekend to Illinois after taking the series opener. The Illini won the final two. And then on Wednesday, and the Pirates will venture down to Wilmington with the Seahawks dropping 2 out of 3 this weekend to Memphis, obviously another American Athletic Conference foe. And then this weekend, Columbia, who's 1-7, they dropped 3 out of 4 this weekend out of Big Ten, Nebraska. So first five-game week, what are your thoughts on those three opponents?
It's still weird to say Nebraska is the Big Ten.
Yeah, there's some hesitation there.
I knew they were playing Nebraska this weekend. When you said they lost in the Big Ten, I was like, that doesn't make sense. Oh, right, they are the Big Ten. Having Elon in Tuesday, that was a pretty standard game for 6 innings 2 weeks ago, and then it all just kind of blew up. Like that, it became a very strange game, as that games in that park tend to do. I said this 2 weeks ago, I'll say it again heading in. We never really see Elon at what they probably are, because their pitching is set up and built for weekend and to try and do well in the CAA like they did a season ago. That's why things have gotten a little bit off the rails when Elon and East Carolina have met in the past, is because Elon usually runs through pitchers and it's not usually the top guys on the bullpen that we see from the Phoenix. You have a bullpen that is pretty well fresh to go for Tuesday, with the exception of maybe Mayhew, because he's the only guy that pitched twice over the weekend. It's going to be very key how many pitchers the Pirates can work through Tuesday, because of the road trip coming up Wednesday against a team that can pitch pretty well in UNCW and has a pretty solid lineup to boot, that ran into a very interesting club over the weekend, and one that I think is noticeable and noteworthy as conference play looms around the corner with what Memphis was able to do. UNCW and going to UNCW after having a home game the night before, a lot of it will be dictated on how many arms are used Tuesday night. And if the Pirates can go through that game, and while I will presume will be a staff day again, they can have a similar type night like what they did with Liberty, or what they had in the Elon game 2 weeks ago, where they only used, let me flip back to that Elon game 2 weeks ago. They wound up using 6 total pitchers, but the first 6 innings were eaten up by 2 guys, Tristan Kimmel, Cam Colmore. And so if they can keep that train going of these midweek games in which they're just getting lights out from the bullpen, and they can go through Tuesday with 4 to 5 pitchers, then that sets up for a pretty nice Wilmington matchup in terms of what you have available arms-wise. And Columbia struggled mightily. They've looked nothing on the road. They started the year late because of issues there. It's been a while since Columbia was that team in the 2015 NCAA tournament that knocked the Pirates out. And that's, you know, it's a team that you shouldn't overlook because they're on the schedule. But it has been a pretty nightmare start for the Lions, no question about it.
And, Corey, you were talking about UNCW. Don't forget, as you talked about, I know yesterday, about the big matchup coming up April 14th, which is my birthday. I want people to come out and celebrate my birthday with me at, with the Wood Ducks. I know that they help hosting the...
Is that for your birthday, Dave? Is that what we're doing there?
Yeah, no, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. But it is my birthday, so everybody can drop off presents there at Will Call. But, no, seriously, I was happy to see. I know Kyle's already got his tickets, Corey.
Got
he bought, like, about 20 or 30 tickets for everybody to come and sit
two,
in the sports objective section.
Two tickets.
What's that?
Two tickets.
Two tickets? Okay, well... roll with me here there, Kyle. It's made a good story.
Quality, not quantity with Kyle from LaGrange.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, exactly. But tickets only $11, Corey. That's unbelievable.
It looks like they're selling pretty fast, too, guys, basing it on the seating chart when I –
yeah, I was looking
at it. If that's accurate. Sometimes those seating charts, I don't know. I know with concerts, they'll release tickets sporadically. I'm assuming they weren't doing this for the East Carolina-Wilmington game. But based on the seating chart, it looks like they're selling pretty well.
Yeah, no, which isn't surprising. I mean, it's not like it's terribly far away from Greenville. You're talking about a half hour, where it would be a bigger hike for UNCW. And so, like Pirate Nation is wanting to do, trying to make a road game or a neutral site game very much feel like a home game. And so, it's important to note, as Kyle has found out here, and I think a lot of people are now catching on to, now that it's been announced, you can't buy tickets through either school. You have to go to the Wood Ducks to do it. Tickets are still available, but they are going rapidly. So woodducksbaseball.com is where you go to get tickets for Dave's birthday game on April 14th. And I love the fact that midweek series is just taking a little bit of a different feel now this year, because you get a third game with UNCW and those games have been pretty interesting over the years, and it kind of came to a head in 2018 in the regional, 2018 in the regional between those two. And now UNCW is a favorite to win their league and their new coaching with Randy Hood taking over. So to get three games on the books with them, I like that quite a bit. The college baseball fan in me loves when series like this occur to just kind of add a little bit of a different flavor to the middle of the college baseball season.
Yeah, and I like it too, particularly being the neutral site game is not really a neutral site game.
No, I mean, there's not a ton of spots to make it truly neutral. I mean, that keeping that in mind, Wilmington has a minor league park, but there's no reason to play there because Brooks Field does the job. And then you're looking at probably Fayetteville as the other minor league park that you could maybe make a neutral site affair for those two. So Kinston is the one in the middle of the two, and it's very much closer to the north than it is the south. And so I guess you could look at Zebulon and maybe that ballpark, but outside of Granger Stadium, you're stretching the definition of neutral from where these two schools sit. So one or the other was going to wind up on the short end in terms of distance here, and it's going to be UNCW for this one. So, I mean, there are enough alums from UNCW in this neck of the woods and in the Raleigh area that might make the drive out for this one as well. And it's, you know, to Kinston from Wilmington, you're talking about 90 minutes. So some folks down there might take that trip instead of coming up to Greenville for the home game here. I fully expect to see some teal and blue in that crowd, but you're talking about a pretty pirate-based city in Kinston, and I would imagine that will be a pretty predominantly purple and gold come April.
And Wilmington's enrollment's going up too every year, so you got a lot of parents probably in this area whose kids may be going to Wilmington.
Well, I just get the sense that maybe like half the stadium will just be friends and family of the Bentons, because you're going to have two twin sons on those teams playing each other in a minor league park. So that will be unique for them, I would imagine.
But,
And there's obviously been some renovations in recent years at Granger Stadium, but last I recall, the capacity of that ballpark is right around 4,100, give or take.
Yeah, I'll be frank. I've not been to Granger Stadium in my time so far. I've not been to a Wood Ducks game. I've driven past it. That's the extent of it. So I know that this matchup would not be happening if not for the renovations that were put into that stadium once Down East became a team there. And so that ballpark is more than ready to host a game like this, and hopefully it is sold out so you can have 4,100 people singing Dave Happy Birthday, and that would be quite an experience for all of us to enjoy.
And I believe the last time the Pirates played there was the 2004 regional. I don't think I'm mistaken on that. I think the last time we played there was when we hosted the 2004 regional that included UNC, Wilmington, Tennessee, and Stony Brook.
Yeah, I don't believe they played a regular season game there. And so, I mean, they had to shift, as you guys well know, some of their tournament games down there. But to get back there after a lengthy time away and have this be a nice Eastern North Carolina rivalry that has a little bit of a different feel to it, there's nothing but positives for that one.
And another thing comes to mind, too, is the 2002 CAA championship, very emotional one. Corey is there in Granger Stadium in right field is where the van was for Coach Keith LeClaire. I'll never forget that. Very special. There's been a lot of special moments for the Pirates and some sad moments, too, for losing the 2001 Super Regional there. You think that we're going to Omaha. Coach LeClaire has told the guys in the locker room, if this is the worst thing that's ever happened to you, then you'll have a really good life. And so there's just been a lot of special memories at Granger Stadium with the Pirates. But this time around, hopefully it'll be a good memory on April 14th.
And
think about this, guys. The last time Cliff was in that ballpark was 01 playing for the Super Regionals. Last time he was in there, to my knowledge.
Actually, he was the first base coach for UNC Wilmington on that 2004 team because he got ejected and – It seemed weird to hear some of our fans giving Cliff a hard time, and the ones that did it, who maybe they knew or maybe they didn't even realize who they were yelling at.
No, I mean they probably realized, didn't know what it would become.
Right.
Good thing Coach K wasn't there, Bubba.
Say that again.
Good thing Coach K wasn't there.
Yeah.
He's one of us.
Cliff being ejected as an assistant at a first base coaching box is not surprising, I would say. We've already seen one ejection for Cliff earlier on this year. And it's interesting you bring all this up on the day that he passes LeClaire on the all-time wins list for ECU head coaches as well. Something he didn't know. He found out about it after the game. When the ECU baseball Twitter account tweeted it out that he with his 213, he just passed Keith for third on the wins list. It surprised him. He didn't even realize that was something that could have been on the table here this weekend. And it not only was it occurred.
Thank you for mentioning that during the broadcast, Corey. I got it up on the Sports Objective Facebook page right away, and it's got a lot of likes and shares, so I was one of the first people to get it out there. Thanks to your broadcast.
Yeah, I mean that's Malcolm Gray, the SID for ECU baseball, that has all those records, and I kind of saw it coming on the horizon, and I confirmed heading in that the Pirates grab three, he passes it, right, and that was a nod of the head, and I'm not terribly surprised Cliff didn't realize that was possible here. He's very much, focused in on the very tiny details of each game in and out that he probably doesn't realize what his career record is right now. And so to hit 213 and pass Keith here today, he was very, very surprised to hear that was something that occurred.
And Coach O is number one on the list, right, Corey?
Yes, 474 for Coach.
Yeah.
Well, who's number two?
That one. Hold on. Now I got to dig that one out. I got to see how far away.
Whoever won the national championship.
Billy Godwin. Billy Godwin.
Godwin.
Oh, Billy's
is,
number
right.
two. Okay. All right. Okay. So coach up Billy and now Cliff. Wow.
But, guys, taking a look around the league, we obviously talked about how well Memphis has been playing. I think they're 10-5 now after taking 2 out of 3 from UNC Wilmington down at Brooksfield. And UCF, they're 15-2. They've won something like 11 or 12 straight, including a sweep at Auburn. They swept Butler over the weekend. They're up into the top 15 now. Tulane's ranked as well, and the Green Wave are now 13-2. And then you also have Wichita State. The Shockers have won 11 straight since dropping 2 out of 3 on opening weekend at Northwestern State. And then you have clubs like, obviously, we talked about UConn, what they did early on, taking 3 out of 4 from Michigan, last year's national runner-up. They swept Presbyterian over the weekend. And then you also had Cincinnati, who got off to an 0-6 start. They have won 7 out of their last 8 and swept Eastern Michigan.
Yeah, where's that UCF series at, guys? Is that in Orlando?
It was in Orlando. It's in Orlando. Yeah, by my count here, I believe the Wichita streak is to 12 now. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 teams in the league are now on winning streaks after this weekend of at least 3. And now this came up in the discussion in the weekend with a fan in Charlotte about someone asked me about UCF and asked about the schedule that they played and said, outside of Auburn, have they really played anybody big time? And I'm like, yeah, the schedule hasn't been that strong outside of that trip to Auburn for UCF, but I will maintain that there are plenty of teams that will have not very strong schedules at this point of the year that don't rattle off 6 wins in a row or 12 wins in a row, like Wichita has just done here, or 7 straight, like Tulane. If you're winning these games, like, there's a reason, like, bar none. Like, it doesn't matter what the competition is. You can have teams come in and grab a game from you. It's baseball. It happens. It's a random sport at times, and weird things can occur. So when you have 7 of the 9 teams right now, and you can say UConn should beat Presbyterian, sure, it's on the road, but they should beat them. Cincinnati should beat Eastern Michigan. Eastern Michigan's awful. Sure, they should, but they still need to go out and do it, and they all did. And so – now you have a situation where a week and a half before conference play begins, you have 5 teams right now in double-digit wins, including a couple you weren't expecting, and you have a bit of a mess at the bottom right now. And so if you have a good idea as to what this conference is going to look like now, come start of May, you're lying, because you're seeing a lot of teams showcase a lot of things that you weren't expecting in the first 15 games of the year. And it's impressive to see. It's really impressive to see.
Yeah, I don't think anybody saw Wichita doing that. I mean, not a year-one turnaround like that. What does their schedule look like, Corey?
I mean, it hasn't been that impressive, to be blunt, but that they played a lot of home games, which is hard to do in that park. They're pitching well, and you know, that they can take 2 midweek games from Air Force. They went to Reno to play a random tournament, and they beat Hofstra and Nevada, and they just took care of Louisiana Tech, who's usually a decent club. They swept in this past weekend. When you look at the top 5, everyone that's sitting with double-digit wins right now, and you can even throw UConn into the mix, who just swept Presbyterian. They're on a 4-game winning streak. They're sitting with 7 wins. Everybody can pitch. There's no secret. Like, if you can throw strikes, you're going to win games. And right now, all these teams, UCF, Tulane, Wichita, East Carolina, Memphis, UConn, they're all throwing strikes. And if you can keep that up in conference play, then you're going to have an absolute mad race to mid-May here.
Obviously, we're only 25% of the way through the season, Corey, but one of the disappointments thus far through the first 14 games in their case has been Houston, and they've had a pretty challenging schedule, but the Cougars dropped 2 out of 3 this weekend out at Arizona, and they are 5-9 now.
Yeah, from what I've gathered, there have been some injuries that have hit their pitching rotation, and if they can't pitch, then that determines precisely what they're capable of doing. They gave Arizona a bit of a run today. They kept going back and forth with them and wound up short, but Glenn Aguilar has been terrific leading the weekend rotation. Lyle Lockhart has been inconsistent at backing him up. And then after that, it's been a nightmare finding pitching. And so I would be shocked if we're sitting here a month from now and they haven't ironed that out in some capacity. And a month from now, if I take a look at the schedule, that's when Houston, a month and a half from now, that's when Houston comes to Greenville in the second weekend of April. I will never write off the ability for Houston to pitch until they are done with a season. Like, just even if you can take that entire pitching staff and then suddenly just put them in a hot air balloon and let them drift off the earth, they will still find a way to pitch when all said and done. And so until proven otherwise, until they end the season with no postseason, with an ERA sitting at 5, it sits just under 5 right now as a team, I will never rule out Todd Whiting's ability to flip a pitching staff around. Because they will need it because they can't hit. And so once those arms come back and once they develop those arms, then there will be the Houston that we're used to see. But right now it hasn't been the case. And you're right, it's surprising. They have played one of the more challenging schedules in the league. I'm not – let's just say I'm not sharpieing them out of the equation, to put it pretty bluntly.
Definitely not. And Corey, as we wrap this up, you've been very generous with your time. Just some around the state results. A couple of these teams, the Pirates will be playing down the road. You had North Carolina getting swept by Link Jarrett and Notre Dame. Obviously, Link Jarrett in his first year there after moving on from UNCG. But Notre Dame won 3 pretty offensive games in that series. I think the Tar Heels scored at least 5 in every game, but Notre Dame scored, I think, 8, 11, and 14. And then NC State, who was undefeated entering the weekend, dropped 2 of 3 up at UVA. The Pirates obviously do not play the Wolfpack this year, but they will be back on the schedule in 21. You had Duke taking 2 out of 3 from Florida State, a top 12 matchup there. As Duke was ranked 12th, and I believe the Seminoles were 11th. And then you had Louisville, a team the Pirates are obviously very familiar with. They took 2 out of 3 at Wake Forest.
A lot of good ACC you mentioned there, Bubba. A lot of very good ACC. Bryce Jarvis might be the best pitcher in the nation right now for Duke, leading on Friday. He nearly fired another no-hitter on Friday after having a perfect game not too long ago. This is not surprising from Duke. I think everyone figured with what they've done with the super regional appearance last year and finally cracking through in the NCAA tournament, the work that Chris Pollard has done bringing in arms to compete in the ACC, and that will carry them a very far way in that league. And so far it's holding true to take 2 of 3 from a team that's as good as Florida State. NC State can hit the crap out of the ball, and they ran into a tricky opposition in Virginia, who right now is looking a little bit better than people maybe thought heading into the season. But State is a team that offensively is almost better than everyone in the country at the moment. And so them taking a bit of a step back on the road, I mean, road trip to Virginia, playing in that park will always proved to be problematic for pretty much anybody, and it was for NC State. Notre Dame sweeping Carolina was a shock, because Notre Dame is supposed to be bottom of the ACC, and that's what preseason picks give you. Louisville doing what they did to Wake Forest is not a shock in the least, and maybe Reed Detmers is the best pitcher in the nation. I don't know. I would love to see. I haven't checked to see if Louisville and Duke will meet this year, but if they do, that Friday night matchup between Detmers and Jarvis would be well worth the money.
And another program that is not on the Pirates' schedule this year, these two programs rarely meet, but there is an East Carolina connection, so I wanted to bring it up. Britt Johnson, a former East Carolina football player, oddly enough, he was a walk-on deep snapper for the Pirates during the Skip Holtz era. He is the recruiting coordinator at App State, and Kermit Smith there, he's a very proven head coach at the Division II level prior to getting the App State job, but that program has won 7 out of 8 now, and they're off to an 8-6 start, having played their first 14 ball games on the road. So I just wanted to throw that out there for other folks that may listen into this show and that follow college baseball across the state.
I'll be honest, I have nothing to add with App State. I wish them well. I can't help you out with that one.
They're playing great,
and that's good for them. I mean, it's App State basketball turned a bit of a corner this year. Now let's see if baseball can follow suit. Because
Corey, have you ever heard that? Have you ever heard Hot, 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 the App State song?
I've not, no.
Oh, I'll share it with you. I'll send it to you on Facebook. Okay. You're in for a treat.
Okay.
It's hot. It's hot.
Yeah,
to say the
and the App State fans can't stand it either. And once you watch it, you'll see why.
Oh, I feel like this is not friendly for family consumption.
Oh, it is.
Well, it's friendly for families. It's just cheesy,
corny,
it's just goofy. Yeah.
Gotcha. It was right after they beat Michigan the following year. It was clearly produced by someone in the music department at App State, and it is
a hype video.
It's
right?
What the internet's made for. Stuff like
okay.
That.
All right. Now I am picking up what you're putting down.
Yeah, it's good stuff. do we have any movie lines for Corey before we let him go? I can't talk.
Well, Corey, we really had not thought of a theme. Just kind of spur of the moment with Columbia coming in this weekend. I told the guys, I said maybe we can have kind of some Ivy League references in a roundabout way.
So I got a lot of those. The bevy of Ivy League references that exist in pop culture.
Yeah, I was going to say Ivy League references in a roundabout way. Just kind of some movies that had been filmed at Harvard or about Harvard over the years. There was one, the movie Good Will Hunting, which was filmed at Harvard, at least parts of it. There was a line in that movie. Nail them while they're vulnerable. That's my motto. So I thought.
Oh, well, like
say what?
That's a Kyle line right there.
Actually, Bubba, that's my motto.
Yeah.
You're going to have to repeat the line for me. You actually cut out a little bit.
I'll repeat it, Corey.
Yeah.
The line was nail them while they're vulnerable.
That's my motto.
Also.
Know them while they're vulnerable. That's my motto.
Good Will Hunting took place at MIT, not Harvard, right?
Okay. Well,
come on, Bubba.
Well, okay.
Bubba
well,
never claimed
I,
to go to either. There.
Yeah, I never seen the movie.
That's
a great movie.
It's a great movie.
I just looked up movies filmed at Harvard, and it came up. So
it was filmed at Harvard, but based at MIT.
Blame Google, not me.
It was probably filmed at Harvard, but it's based on MIT.
I like the thought, though, of going the Ivy League route for the theme because of Columbia and not going with movies that are set in, like, New York City where Columbia is based.
How about Columbia drug lord references? Get
a little Narcos in here?
Yeah, I got a line for you, Corey. It has nothing to do with the Ivy League or Columbia, but it's a line that I thought of the other day. It's actually from wrestling. It's from one of my heroes, a guy named Jim Cornette. Dave knows who that is. And
yes,
the line is, Corey, he'll slap you naked and hide your clothes. He'll slap you naked and hide your clothes.
He'll slap you naked and hide your clothes.
Yes.
Got it.
You're talking about Good Will Hunting. One of my favorite lines is when Matt Damon says he gets many drivers, the character in the movie's phone number. He said, I got her phone number. How do you like them apples? So I didn't know if there was a way you could take how do you like
that's
them apples.
Good. I got her phone number. Yeah, that's a good line in general right there.
All right, down, written.
And this is not a movie that I'm familiar with. Maybe you guys are. It's like The Great Debaters or something, but apparently it was filmed at Harvard. And it was said, we have to do what we need to do in order to be able to do what we want to do.
Wow, that's a mouthful. All right,
that's an easy one to work in.
We have to do
We do what we have to do so we can do what we want to do.
Oh, my Lord. We do
Just scratch that one out.
We have to do so we can do what we want to do?
Right.
Yes.
Or scratch that one.
That actually works. That works well for the Pirates because...
It actually works pretty well with what we saw this weekend here. I can't say I've ever heard of that movie.
Well,
yeah, neither did I.
Coach O says that a lot, but he says it like this. Do that which needs to be done.
Yeah.
That's a sage old ball coach right there. Trust me on that one.
Indeed. Guys, you got anything else? Any more movie lines?
No, if not, Corey,
all,
where can people...
All out.
Yeah,
all
Corey, out. Where can people actually send those lines to you if we have listeners that are still listening right now? And if they are, how can they send them to you?
They can send them directly to you, Dave. Your phone number is not kidding. you can find me on the Twitter machine at Corey Glore with an EY and a double O. Corey Glore. Corey Glore.
All right.
I got one more. Only Dave will get this joke. WUND TV, Channel 2, Columbia.
The old PBS is now in Greenville.
Correct. Now in Greenville. Used to be in Columbia, North Carolina.
That was great. That was classic Kyle. I love it.
Now, classic Kyle with 2 K's.
And that's right.
Absolutely.
Corey, man, thank you so much. I know that you've got definitely got the want to sleep in your bed tonight and not the hotel or the no offense to the buses, but I'm sure that you'll get much better rest tonight and definitely get ready for Tuesday night's action. And again, what time is the airtime for that game on Tuesday night?
Tuesday night, 6:15. Wednesday night, 5:45. Join us in the midweek, shall you?
All right, man. Thank you so much, as always. So we know we kept you longer. That's our usual, I guess, our motto, but not intentionally. Thank you so much for being on, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Gentlemen, thank you. Enjoy your lost hour of sleep, and happy early birthday to you, Dave.
Thank you. And as always, guys, you've been listening to Extra Innings right here on the Sports Objective Podcast.
That concludes this week's episode of Extra Innings. We appreciate you tuning in and look forward to you joining us again next Sunday night. Remember, the show can be found on numerous platforms, including, but not limited to, TuneIn Radio, Audio Boom, SoundCloud, Blog Talk Radio, Apple Podcasts, and many more. Follow us on social media, on Twitter at TheSportsOBJ, on Instagram at TheSportsObjective. Like and follow us on Facebook, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. We appreciate you listening to Extra Innings on the Sports Objective Podcast. And as always, go Pirates!